We've got another day with some gains in the U.S. equities. The markets are trying to hold on to those. Livestock markets chased sellers from futures. And this week's day two of trade in the grains was similar to day one with a lot of mixed price action. Where to next and what's the long-term outlook for the markets? We'll lean on the guys from Pro Farmer for some direction.
Live from nowhere near anybody via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it is a conversation with Pro Farmer's Captains of Cognition, editor Brian Grady and analyst Jeff Wilson. And right after the news, Varsity Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Hey, buddy. The guys from Pro Farmer, Brian and Jeff. Good. It's really good to get those guys back on right now. They're so good at bouncing ideas off each other. When we get into these extreme kind of situations, like I think we're in the livestock trade right now, just bouncing around all over the place, volatility exceptionally high in livestock trade. And it's not just what's happening in the futures market, obviously, it's what's also happening in the cash markets that we're going to talk most about with Brian and Jeff today. So should be a really good conversation.
Well, we've got, isn't there something coming up later this week too to talk about? It seems I can't think of what it might be.
Yeah, that's
Let's
right.
Let's see.
Supply and demand.
Oh, there you go. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
On Thursday.
On Thursday. That's right. Supply and demand report. And by the way, just to kind of preview what we've got going the rest of the week, tomorrow we're going to be talking a lot of cattle in the afternoon. Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company is going to be our guest.
Yeah.
On Thursday, on report day, on supply and demand report day, which is put up by the World Ag Outlook Board, we've got Seth Meyer from the University of Missouri.
No way.
Yeah, you know why that's really cool, right?
Well, didn't he used to put those reports together?
Yeah.
Is he that guy?
Yeah, that guy. So Seth is going to be with us on Thursday to talk about the supply and demand report, to talk about other issues that are happening in the grain trade as well and in agriculture in general. Yeah. But it will be interesting to get a report day take from the guy just last fall he was still responsible for the supply and demand reports. And then on Good Friday of this week, when the markets are closed, Chris Barron. We're going to have a talk with Chris Barron, AgView Solutions.
Perfect.
Yeah. Really good. Really good.
Good.
All right, man. Let's get to the news. What was moving markets?
Well, Chip, the first weekly crop progress report of the spring rated 62% of the U.S. winter wheat crop in good to excellent condition. That's slightly above the initial rating a year ago, which was 60%, and much better than trade expectations. However, the Kansas HRW wheat crop was rated 49% good to excellent. That's below the year-ago rating, which was 55%, Chip. Mm-hmm. July hard red winter wheat was 1¾ cents lower, 480. July soft red slipped 3½ cents to 547½. July spring wheat softened 2 cents to 536, bud.
Yeah, a little bit of rain, I think, in Russia, Ukraine is going to be helping out that winter wheat crop over there, too. At least there's a chance for some showers.
Okay. Well, funds have been heavy sellers in corn futures and are thought to hold a large net short position at this time. Today, however, Chip, fund sellers backed away from the market to allow for a turnaround Tuesday trade scenario. Still, futures remain well below the closest resistance levels, suggesting today's price action was no more than an upside correction. Traders also expect the loss of corn for ethanol demand to be a near constant reminder of usage struggles.
Right.
May corn futures were 3¾ cents higher, 331½. July corn gained 3¾ cents to close at 337¼. December corn closed at 351, up 2¾ cents today.
Yeah, I think there's more than a little bit of concern over what exactly those usage estimates are going to look like in Thursday's supply and demand report for corn. And so there's some concern over that, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. Well, usage estimates in Thursday's supply and demand report are a source of debate in the soybean market. Some traders are looking for USDA's World Ag Outlook Board to reflect expectations of more Chinese demand for U.S. beans, while others expect use estimates to trend lower into the end of the marketing year. Many traders are also looking for South American crop estimates to be cut from month-ago levels, but not enough to have a significant impact on global carryover projections. May bean futures were 0.75 cents lower today, 54.75. July beans slipped a quarter of a penny to 8.61. November 2020 bean futures closed at 8.66¾. That's up a penny and a half, Chip.
Yeah, USDA could take 2 or 3 million metric tons off the Brazilian bean crop, million tons off the Argentine bean crop. And I'll ask Brian and Jeff about it coming up here, but I don't think that would have a whole lot of impact on soybean price action right now.
Okay. Well, today's recovery in cattle and hog futures has led to some projections that livestock futures have factored in worst-case scenarios. Others, however, argue today's price gains were a pause in the downtrend as the industry faces additional plant closures, a slowdown in processing lines, and a long-range struggle to rebuild restaurant demand. Still, with a void of sellers, the cattle complex jumped the $4.50 daily trading limit, and lean hog futures closed up the $3 trading limit. April live cattle closed at 88.32½. August cattle closed at 89.32½. April feeders finished the day at 114.92½. April lean hogs closed at 44.12½. And July end of the day 57.77½. Chip.
Okay, let's see if I can get this right. Feeder cattle tomorrow will have a $6.75 daily trading limit. Live cattle will stick at $4.50, and lean hogs will expand to $4.50 for Wednesday's trade. All right.
All right.
Got him right. Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain. How you doing, man?
I'm good. What's going on? Good.
Well, you know what's going on better than I do. What do you think's happening in these grains?
Well, USDA should cut their demand forecast on Thursday. They should take a whole bunch off ethanol. They should take a whole bunch off soybean exports. Whether or not they do that or how much they do is up to the government. You could make a case that they should take 200 million bushels off ethanol, but they may only take 50 and they may kind of slow play this thing. They may not touch soybean exports. They may wait a little bit longer, but I think the markets are already trading the ideas that we've got drastically lower demand for corn via ethanol and drastically lower demand for soybeans via exports.
Okay. Obviously, I think most people get the ethanol side of things. But on the bean export side, not that long ago, we were hearing about tight port supplies. The crushers were in China were tight on soybeans. What's changed there?
Well, I think that those were short-term logistics issues. You've got to remember, we never had a crop problem. We never had any real surge in demand. They were logistics issues that were kind of short term in nature, I think. The thing with the soybean demand numbers that you got to realize, this is old crop demand. We're talking the marketing year that ends at the end of this coming August.
Yep.
China has shown no interest in old crop U.S. soybeans,
right,
and I don't think they're going to. I think they'll be aggressive with new crop beans starting this spring and into the summer, but this old crop situation is a different deal.
Okay, so bean carryover at the end of the 2019-20 marketing year, I think the average trade guess is around 470 or something like that. What are you thinking?
Oh, I think it's got to be north of 500, probably closer to 600.
All right. Well, you're a barrel of laughs today.
I'll
Joe,
have better
thanks.
News for you someday, Chip. I'll have better news someday, buddy.
I love it. I love it. Hey, stick to that isolation out in the middle of a lake.
That's the idea.
That's it. All right. Thank you, Joe. That is Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain, down there in the Nashville area. Coming back, we've got the guys from Pro Farmer, Jeff Wilson and Brian Grady, right here on AgriTalk. Wilson! Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. Agri Talk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. And we are getting some of that spring air into the broadcast bunker this afternoon. And with that, let's go ahead and run this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Rick Dirks. He is a farmer in Illinois and an Asgrow Yield Contest winner. Rick, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you doing this morning?
Good. How are you, Chip?
I'm doing just dandy. Just dandy. What's the situation over your way? What's the field conditions like?
We're south of Geneseo. And here a week or so ago, we didn't get as much rain as north. So there's been ammonia going on around here for the last week. And even heard of a few planters starting to roll in the area yesterday.
Really? Wow, getting the things fired up. So, hey, what was the key to the high yields that you saw last year, Rick?
Oh, there's a lot of things. Fertility, seed genetics is a big one. Mother Nature is probably the most important one. Keeping the field clean and keeping the beans healthy.
All right, so if you look at all the things that you did agronomically, was there any one thing that you think really helped you push the envelope on yield?
I think seed genetics was probably number one last year.
All right. So you're working with your agronomist again for 2020, I assume.
Oh, yes. We've got a plan laid out. And you know how that is. It's subject to changes depending on what Mother Nature gives us here in the next month or two.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, hey, Rick, good luck to you again this year. Thank you for making time for us, and we'll talk with you again real soon.
All right, Chip, thank you.
You bet. That is Rick Dirks. He is a farmer over south of Geneseo, Illinois, and an Asgrow Yield Contest winner. Thank you so much to Rick and to DeKalb, Asgrow, Delta Pine for sponsoring Agronomy Week here on AgriTalk. All right. Welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
David Davis.
And it is time to have a conversation with the guys from Pro Farmer. We've got Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, how you doing?
Oh, I'm all right. Just holding down the fort here by myself.
Yeah. You're isolated at the office all by yourself.
The safest place. There's nobody around. And I don't have to homeschool my kids. My wife's doing that. So. God bless her.
Got it all figured out, don't you? Is the fridge stocked and everything? Or
not with what you think it's stocked with. No. That's good for stuff. Home consumption.
There you go. All right. Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. How you doing, Jeff? It's good to talk with you again, buddy.
Glad to feel the temperatures rising. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, no doubt. Like I said, I got a window open into the broadcast bunker. It feels awfully good. Guys, I want to start with livestock trade, and it feels like we can talk about some of the issues that both the cattle market, the fat cattle market, and the hog market are dealing with out across the countryside. And Jeff, when we talked last, what was it, 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, these plant shutdowns, the slowdowns, the labor issues were right at the top of the list of what we were concerned about for these markets.
Right. And that's why the markets did what they did. They were, you know, starting to head lower and sharply lower, even though the meat was moving pretty well. And then, you know, we got some of the plants starting to have some slowdowns and even suspending operations for this week to make sure everything's cleaned up. And they have a way of making sure that the disease doesn't spread among other workers. So it's not a big surprise. The market seems to have already anticipated a lot of that type of slowdown, but we still have, you know, plentiful supplies. And the big worry is that the loss of the restaurant and institutional school demand is not going to be made up by at-home eating. And so we'll just have to see whether or not we can eat our way out of it and maybe even get the exports to ramp up a little bit more. We've had some pretty good sales over the last few weeks, and hopefully that can continue.
Yeah, hopefully it can. And when we talk about the impact on demand from the retail food industry, food service industry, Brian, I mean, the impact is no clearer than what it is on bacon, right?
Yeah, you have to break it down by the individual cuts, I think.
Yeah.
I think that when we look at, there's a major difference between beef and pork and chicken. Beef is consumed about half in the restaurant and half at the retail level. Food services, I shouldn't just say restaurants. So that includes restaurants, schools, hotels, et cetera. So it's about 50-50. The exports on beef only account for about 12% of total use. When you're looking at pork, it's far fewer menu items on restaurants. Far less is served at the school through the school lunch programs, those types of things. So the food service level is far less on pork. But 35% of pork use goes to exports. So, over a third goes to exports. So, I think that the pork, because of that, is set up to handle this better than beef is, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Just how everything shakes out. And you have a lot of, pork consumed, through the retail level. And let's keep in mind now that the consumer in the environment that we're in, one, we got extreme economic uncertainty right now. And what's that cause the consumer to do? Well, it typically causes them to reduce their expenditures on meat as much as they can, while still keeping a good protein supply on the table. And they look for more economical cuts. And so you're going to see more ground meats and that type of stuff consumed because you can stretch it. It's hard to stretch a steak or a pork chop over a period, just make many meals out of it. The pound of ground beef or ground pork or whatever the case may be can be added with other things and stretched a little bit further. And so I think that that's what you'll see the consumer do.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, when the pork product market really started to fall apart on us, bellies were just crashed, and that's the bacon as a condiment at the restaurant level, right?
Sure. That's the other part of that whole equation, is that the coolers were already pretty full of bacon.
Okay.
From what I can divide from the stocks cold storage report, and it's a situation where you already had it starting to get full. Because you stockpile in the fall and winter, so you can have BLTs in the summer. Well, they were already, and then all of a sudden you had to start putting more meat in there, and you're starting to see some decent bacon specials starting to pop up. I know that we loaded up on some bacon here, and I don't mind having bacon every day for breakfast.
Good man. Wilson.
But that's the whole story, is that people learn. I mean, like I got two 20-year-old sons, and they're learning how to cook now, and it's like they're learning how to, before it was like we just go out and get takeout, they still are ordering, getting the carry out stuff, but they're learning how to cook fish, they're learning how to cook beef, so that a beef roast will last them a couple days, like Brian was saying, and they got meat for a couple 3 days, and they can share it with their roommate, and it's all good. I think that's going to be the big change when we come out of this, is that people have learned that cooking for yourself is a pretty nice option and a whole lot cheaper. And that how that all plays out. And I think the restaurateurs are learning that they need to have, meals that are hot, nutritious, and not just hamburgers. And it's ready for you to pick up, and you just bring it home. And, that's what our whole society is about, is convenience. So whoever wins that is going to win the meat wars when we get out.
Very interesting. Brian, when we come out the other side of this COVID crisis, do you feel like there's going to be some long-term permanent changes made to meat and protein consumption trends?
I do. It's hard to put a finger on it right now, but I think everything is changing. We're going to have a new normal when we come out of this, whenever that is. And because of that, we will have adapted. Once you do something for a certain period of time, it becomes the new normal. And then that you have to then shift away from that. So I do think that, you know, there is some of that. Getting back to the bacon stuff, I mean, every restaurant had multiple burgers or sandwiches that had bacon on it.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not able to consume as much through the retail level, the grocery store, as what we were, you know, eating out at restaurants. So that is a big thing. But
right.
We'll see where it all comes out when it shakes down. But there will be a difference, no doubt.
Very good. Very good. Hey, we're talking with Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. And when we come back, we're going to start to get ready for Thursday's supply and demand report. What to expect on those usage estimates.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on. For our family and yours.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Coronavirus at ADM, a corn processing facility in Clinton, Iowa. Four workers at the ADM plant there have currently tested positive for COVID-19. Some disruptions in Brazil, but grain is still making its way into export channels. The U.S. is also dealing with hefty fees at congested ports. Ships are getting hit with steep fees as the coronavirus slows trade and forces ships to idle at docks. Brazil is stealing some soybean meal market share away from Argentina. Trade flows data shows Brazil exported 1.4 million metric tons of soy meal in March, the second largest tally for the month in the last 5 years. That's Pro Farmer's Headline News. Check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is paying tribute to farmers, agronomists, and all of agriculture chasing the dream this agronomy week. Our coverage is brought to you by DeKalb, Asgrow, and Delta Pine. Learn more at agronomyweek.com. And let's learn more about it right now in this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Eric Best. He is a DeKalb Asgrow Delta Pine agronomist in Texas. Eric, it's good to talk with you again. How you doing?
So far, so good. Appreciate you having me on today.
Absolutely. What's the situation down your way? What area do you cover, and what are the field conditions like?
Well, I'm out here in West Texas in the middle of about a 6 million acre cotton patch, and very similar to last year. We're starting off very wet. Soil moisture looks good. Temperatures are on the rise. Outlook looks favorable for the forecast. So a lot of field work going on and a lot of growers optimistic about what we can and can't do and getting ready for this crop to get one started here in another couple of weeks.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. And as we're getting ready to get that crop started in a couple of weeks, what are guys doing? What do they need to keep in mind to get that crop off to the best start they can?
Well, a lot of times our biggest limiting factor is moisture, especially with the large amount of solely rain-fed dry land type acres we have. So a lot of times our first shot at getting a stand established may be the only chance we get. So I always encourage growers, let's wait till the conditions are right. Seed is expensive, moisture is fleeting, and a lot of times we get one shot at getting that crop going. So wait till the conditions are right. Let's put it into warm, moist soil. Let's get that crop off to a good start. It pays dividends in the end.
All right, good stuff. So Agronomy Week, the theme is chasing the dream. How are you chasing the dream, Eric?
Well, every day is a dream. Some days better than others, but it's always rewarding to me to get up at the end of the year and be able to see the growers happy with the recommendations we've made in our products and to see them successful. And, you know, it's a noble profession, and it's a very good one that growers trust us for our advice, and it makes me happy to see it when they're successful.
You bet. It works best when your dreams merge into one, doesn't it, Eric?
Absolutely.
Yep, good stuff. Thank you, Eric. We'll talk to you again later.
Appreciate you having me.
That is Eric Best, DeKalb Asgrow Delta Pine agronomist in Texas. Thank you so much. Okay, let's get back to the conversation with the guys from Pro Farmer. We've got Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson and Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. Jeff, when we were talking with Joe Vaklovic at the start of the show, he's leaning, doesn't really anticipate that USDA is going to make a lot of changes on the soybean balance sheet, but he thinks ultimately this carryover number on beans is going up. What are your thoughts there? And I'm talking about on old crop, of course.
I'm not convinced it's, I mean, going up a lot, I don't know about. I think it probably will have to be revised up a little bit. We're still ahead on export sales for the year. I don't know whether or not we can carry, we can see some fresh Chinese business. It was positive to see the dollar finally starting to weaken against the Brazilian real. There's still some uncertainty about how Argentina is going to do. They are moving into the winter season, so COVID-19 could actually be ready to pop on the scene more actively down there as we're going into the summer when it tends to retreat a little bit. The key is, can we get this meal market to stabilize now? Chinese crush margins are very good. They're producing more pork, more poultry, more fish, and they need beans. So China's basically been buying Brazilian beans. They're filled out into May and starting on June. So maybe we can get a little of the late summer business, but probably it's going to be new crop business.
Okay. Yeah, that fits well with what Joe was saying too there as far as the new crop business. He's pretty excited about that. Beej, they're taking the top end off the Brazil and the Argentine bean crops right now, aren't they?
Yeah, we're seeing both of those come down. It's looking like Brazil may not have a record soybean crop. Normally that would be, you know, a headline grabber. I don't know at this point with the environment. It's really going to take some export disruptions out of South America to get any kind of old crop business for the United States here. Jeff and Joe both mentioned, it's going to be new crop export demand. We've actually shifted some of our exports out of the old crop into the new crop marketing year here recently, because of that. So it does look like the old crop soybean carryover is going to gravitate up. I know Joe mentioned, 500 million bushels around in that level. Probably we're not quite that high at this point.
Okay. Switch gears, go over to the corn balance sheet. Jeff, I got a text from somebody that said Gas Buddy figures show total U.S. gasoline demand down 51% from the daily average from January 1 to March 1. Well, when you're losing the liquid fuel demand like that, it's going to have an impact on your ethanol, and it's clearly having an impact there with the plant shutdown and slowdowns.
Absolutely. And the market reflects that. We're down dramatically. We're down at 3.5-year lows. You know, it took us 6 weeks to crash and burn, and, on the virus and the price war between the Saudis and the Russians, and, the Fed, the U.S. government, many other governments, many other central banks are pumping liquidity like never before. And that type of liquidity suggests, after these big sell-offs that we've seen, do we get big recoveries that are much faster than people thought? You know, everyone was early on in the virus fear was, we're going to get this V recovery. And then it was, No, we're going to get a little V. No, we're going to get an L. No, we're going to get an I. Just a big, deep depression. So there's hardly any, people out there saying, hey, this thing could be much quicker recovery than anybody anticipates. And the fact that we have all this money floating around and you have, people getting the $1,200 check, the unemployment benefits are better than some people make working a job. There is income there is money in the system. And once we get rid of the shelter in place restrictions, let's see how fast everything comes back. Clearly, people will start driving again, but will they drive to work? It's not going to be as quick in the fuel side as it will be in the restaurant side.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Jeff, before I ask Brian what he thinks the recovery looks like. Let's say that somehow, some way, our brilliant scientists in this country find that vaccination. And all of a sudden, it's easy to make. It's easy to make in quantity and quality. We're going to give a shot to everybody so that you can you don't have to worry about it. What's the recovery look like there?
That's a big capital V.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a no-brainer. If you but if we get the testing done so we can isolate the people that get the new disease, if we can isolate those after we get past this shelter in place, that will also help. I mean, the whole thing is, yes, get the vaccines and then ultimately get the therapeutics that help people recover, and then people will feel less afraid to go out. I mean, it's going to be a slow recovery in terms of people wanting to get together, but if you get something like that, it's a capital V with all this liquidity in the system.
Yeah, I agree, and it feels to me like it would be a food commodity-led recovery in a lot of ways. But, Brian, that doesn't seem like a very the possibility of that happening seems pretty low. What do you think the recovery looks like?
Well, it's going to take longer than you laid out. You laid out a best-case scenario, to be honest with you. So I think that just as we're seeing here that with all the COVID numbers and everything, we're probably not going to get to a worst-case scenario from from the scope and the numbers, pure numbers standpoint. We also aren't going to see a best-case scenario. I think it's probably going to be somewhat of a graduated recovery. We may see some markets that shoot higher, but in general, I think that you will see more of a steady increase. You will see some false starts probably, where markets shoot up and then fresh sellers come into the marketplace and push it back down, and that's probably going to be the course. Baby steps and get to your feet first, and you got to do all that before you can run.
Yeah, fits and starts in this recovery is what it feels like to me. Beej, as you look forward to the end of the week, the holiday shortened week, and the supply and demand reports, anything that you're really anticipating that people should be watching for?
Well, you know, this is normally the April report. Keep in mind, you're coming off of the prospective plantings and the grain stocks numbers. So this is normally just a fine tuner. What we don't know is how USDA is going to handle COVID. We kind of maybe have an idea because we know how they handled the phase one China trade deal, and that's that they were a follower instead of a leader on it. And so I think that that's probably going to be somewhat the case. But with that said, we know that ethanol demand is absolutely, you know, just really taking it in the shorts here.
Suffered.
Recently. We know that, you know, some of the other demand sectors have also broken down. And so there will be, I think, probably bigger than normal changes in this month's report, no doubt about it.
Yep. And, Jeff, real quick, it's right in front of the first official look at the 2020-21 marketing years, and it's just kind of a tweener report, like Brian was saying.
Absolutely. I mean, the focus will be on the May supply and demand report.
Yeah.
But for right now, like, I agree with Brian. I think the way they handled the Chinese trade agreement and being a follower is what they're going to do with the COVID-19 impact on these ag markets.
Wait for actual impacts there. All right,
May is far bigger because we'll be another month down the road, and, you know, that'll be the new crop balance sheets as well.
All right. Well, we'll plan on getting you guys on in front of that one again, and so that we can preview what to expect. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you again soon.
You betcha.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. That's Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady. All right. When we come back, Davis and I are going to take a breath, kind of reflect on these first 2 days of the week.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM. AgriTalk!
They sound angry.
Oh, they're not. They're just enthusiastic.
Oh, good. Good, yeah. Good. Yeah. Hey, speaking of ACAM... from your billboard there. They are the sponsor of our Farmer Forum on Wednesdays, which we're having tomorrow morning.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And tomorrow morning, as part of Agronomy Week, we're going to have the Ray Brothers on. Okay?
Okay.
They're from Dyersville, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they have a baseball stadium being built on one of their old cornfields.
Yeah.
Right next to the Field of Dreams there in Dyersville.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
mm-hmm.
and it's where MLB is supposed to play a game in August this year.
Well, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to talk to the Ray brothers about what's happening out there.
Awesome.
Should be interesting on the Farmer Forum. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that. So there they are. They're out there farming on, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Got to farm on.
Farm on. This is a new promotion that Farm Journal is pursuing, and it is an effort for everybody to show that we are in this together. It's spring. Everybody's firing up. We had conversations today with guys from across the country, and everybody is getting some fertilizer down. The anhydrous starting to flow.
Yep.
Heck, there's some seed going in the ground. So everybody is farming on. And I think it's really a cool effort that Farm Journal is putting together. Now, this is what you do. If you want to be part of it, what you do is you, to the number 31313, you text hashtag farm on and include a picture of how you are farming on in spring of 2020.
What a cool idea.
Yeah, I love it. So now when you do this hashtag farm on, it's capital F, A-R-M, mm-hmm. capital O-N. So I'm farm on. Okay.
All right.
So, but text that hashtag farm on to 31313 with a picture of how you are farming on, and we'll see how it gets picked up and gets used out there. Now, of course, do it on Twitter too, right?
Well,
hashtag farm on, throw your farm mm-hmm. name on there. Who's in the picture? Throw them out there. And let's get this thing going. Let's show how we're in this together in the spring of 2020.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm about ready for a little bit of green out here. It's going to be, I'm really looking forward, especially this spring. You know, you've got that nice black dirt, and then all of a sudden there's little green stripes that pop up. I love that.
Yes, that is definitely one of my, another sign that I look for at this time of the year is when, mm-hmm. you know, you're out driving around, you get up on top of a hill and you can see out over some timber ground and you see mm-hmm. kind of that soft green look to it as the buds are starting to come.
Oh, yes.
That's when the air smells the freshest, dude. It's one of my favorite things. It's one of my favorite things. Yeah. So, and here we are. We're doing it. So I got a message from a livestock producer during the conversation there with Jeff and Brian. We can't ignore what is happening on the online meat orders.
Okay.
And there seems to be an uptick in that direct-to-consumer push for beef producers, for hog producers, to give consumers an alternative to what they're used to dealing with. Maybe you want to buy a half a hog. There's more opportunities out there than maybe what you've ever seen before. If you want to buy, if you want to get in on some direct from producer beef, RCAF USA has started a new listing of producers that are willing to take that fed steer, that fed animal, that market animal to a local butcher shop where it's processed. You pay for the animal, you pay for the processing, and you show up and you pick up the meat. I think it's pretty cool what they're doing with that.
I like that a lot.
And it being RCAF, they're mm-hmm. looking at a way to disrupt the cattle market and disrupt the packers' lynch, you know, the stranglehold that they feel that they've got on this cattle market. So good for them. Good for them. I think it's kind of a cool thing
Absolutely.
That they've got going. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So mm-hmm. there's lots of that happening. You can't forget about the meal kits. I think when we see what's going on with the meal kit orders, we're going to be surprised by that. There's a service out there called Butcher Block. Somebody reminded me of that it is getting a lot of attention right now. And then, of course, the old standby, Omaha Steaks.
Sure.
some of the sales figures that I've heard on Omaha Steaks compared to a year ago are shocking. Absolutely shocking. I'm not saying that that's going to make up for everything that's happening at the restaurant or in the food service, but it, hey, man, the situation that we're in, every little bit counts. Every little bit counts.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And it's, I mean, a day like today here in the middle of the country, I mean, I've had the grill out. And I don't, I'm telling you, I don't even put mine away.
Yeah. I think we're going to probably do a little of that here ourselves at the Newsman Ranch.
Yeah. That's a good idea. And it sounds like there's a ribeye going on the grill at Big Apple Joe Stackler's tonight. It's already in the fridge marinating in that Omaha Steaks dry rub. Good stuff there, Joe.
Outstanding, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt. Okay. In summary of here's what the recovery looks like, conversation that we had with Jeff and with Brian. In all likelihood, this is going to be a long haul to get the recovery. It's not just a recovery from the COVID-19 or coronavirus. It's a recovery in confidence now that we also have to deal with. Having the confidence to go out and get amongst people again. And it'll happen. It will happen, you guys. It's just that it's going to take a little bit of time to get there. All right. Hey, come back and join us again tomorrow. We've got the Farmer Forum going, and tomorrow afternoon, Chris Swift.